Cool, well, if you're looking for M-Audio guitar tools for the modern praise and worship setting, you're in the right place. So if you're looking for something other than that, then you'd be in the wrong. How are you guys' day going so far?
Good.
Now, I met Tony. Tony, remind me where you're from again?
I'm from Calvary Chapel, Kansas. Up in Tribeco Canyon.
Where is that?
It's right off, actually it's right next to Santa Margarita.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. And what church is it?
Calvary Chapel.
Calvary Chapel. Yeah. And we're coming from?
Sebastopol. Calvary Chapel, Sebastopol, which is north of San Francisco.
North of San Francisco.
47 minutes.
Okay. You drove or you flew?
Flew.
Ah, okay. And you're same place? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Calvary Chapel, Spring Valley, Las Vegas.
Spring Valley, Las Vegas. And flew?
Mountain.
Drove?
Yeah.
So, guitar players? All guitar players here?
Yes.
And drums and, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jack of everything. Got your finger. Okay. So, how many of you... Well, first of all, how many of you are familiar with M-Audio or have M-Audio products or... Okay. And you have a Delta 66. Yeah. We talked about that before. How many of you are doing computer-based recording? And what are you using at?
Tascam.
122?
Yeah.
We'll forgive you. How many of you are here because you're interested in computer-based recording and some of the tools and... Yeah, everybody's interested. Are you just here with Adam? So we're going to talk about a couple of the tools specifically geared toward the guitarist. And what we'll do is we're going to break it down into just the applications of it with from a preparation standpoint as far as songwriting in a project-based home studio, and also some of the ways that you can bring that over into the worship service and use one of the applications that we'll be talking about, and also one of the pieces of hardware that we'll be talking about to incorporate some of those things that you're doing in production in a home recording environment and bring those over into the live setting. For those of you who are kind of unfamiliar with M-Audio, M-Audio has been around for coming up on 16 years. We were MIDI-MAN before we were M-Audio, and we kind of made our niche with computer-related peripherals. A lot of our early products were like centered around MIDI interfaces, to bring information from keyboards or drum machines or sequencers into the computer. We've actually come quite a bit of a long way, and I have catalogs here, and you can see a product line pretty much now encompasses everything that you could imagine within a home studio environment, and now like a live studio environment too. That goes from audio input and output peripherals for your computer, MIDI input peripherals and output peripherals for the computer, controller keyboards, software, microphones, speakers, loop libraries, just pretty much everything under the sun to meet that needs. And it's an exciting time as far as from the sense of a project-based studio, because five years ago or 6 years ago or 7 years ago, to really get a good recording project-based studio out of your home cost mega bucks. Some of you might have invested in a lot of that stuff, as I did. Where we're kind of at now with a lot of the things that are available technologically in that mind is that everything is pretty centered off the CPU of your computer. And our computers now are pretty powerful to sustain a lot of that load. So now, rather than buying a $5,000, $10,000 ADAT tape machine, which is essentially like a dedicated computer to record, or even like an outboard compressor or a reverb unit or something to that degree, everything is running as the centerpiece of the computer, which most of us already have very powerful computers to sustain it. And then we just add peripherals, like an audio I/O, which allows us to bring analog information and bring it into the computer digitally, or MIDI type of surfaces that allow us to trigger MIDI information stored on our computer or stored from outboard gear. So the peripherals are a lot more affordable and less expensive to make a really, really nice home studio much more possible for the average person. So the first thing that we're going to talk about today is the black box. The black box is sort of the idea of the Line 6 Pod. It's an amplifier modeler box, and it's extremely, extremely handy in a praise and worship setting, and also in a home setting, because you can get the big sounds from amp type of modelers with the effects in a box that can go direct to your sound person that's running the sound in your church, and you don't have to fight battling big stacks. It's awesome.
Does the Line 6 do the same thing?
The Line 6 pod is the same type of format. It's effects in an amp modeler box. The thing that makes the M-Audio Black Box a little bit unique is it has an audio interface built into it. So you can actually, it's USB ready to go into your computer and actually record straight from that unit with the amplifier model box. So we'll just take a quick tour here and hear some of the sounds that are possible off of the Black Box.
I had this set up so it was going through live originally, so.
Yeah, that's okay. Sure. So I'm going to bring up live here. This is going to be the main centerpiece of the software that we're going to talk about, but we're going to pull it up to go through. So the Black Box basically has guitar sound shaping in three different categories. You have your amp modelers, and it has 12 of the most famous amp models. Do you remember? Fender
Deluxe, Fender Twin, Fender Bassman. Then it moves into the Marshall. It's got a clean Marshall, a Marshall Plexi, a very heavy Marshall, which I'm imagining probably a JCM 900 or something like that. I think it does Ubershaw, which is like super ultra high gain amp. Yeah, some of the other ones.
You can scroll through and see them.
Soldano is another one.
Yeah, there's Soldano.
So
there's a dual rectifier, high watt.
What we'll do here is we'll just kind of take it piece by piece. So each of the three buttons, you have an amp button, you have a effects button, you have a delay button. If you hold down any of them, it cuts that effect out of it. So let's hold down all three of those buttons, the amp, the effects, and the delay, to just get the clean sound that's out of that box itself. So this is your clean going out of the three on the box. Okay, now if we hold down the amp button, then we can scroll through some of these amp models so we can hear them in action. Each of the amp models brings up its own parameters like drive and a treble and a bass cut that you can use to shape like any amp model. They can also be assigned to foot pedals, one of three foot pedal switches. You have expression pedal input and two momentary pedals. So what are we listening to now?
This is a Fender Bassman model. Drive isn't too, it's just a little bit of drive, pretty clean.
So let's hear it with a little bit of drive.
You can get a little bit dirty. Acts more like a bassman, it doesn't really get that dirty, it just kind of gets a little bit more tone. So, what's the bassman? A deluxe, a lot more MIDI, less bass than the bassman. I never thought Fender sounded that great when they were distorting anyway at the preamp. That's a twin, and you have your tone control, so I'm going to roll the treble down, because everybody knows twins are always too bright. But you can make it bright if you want. Let's see, what else is there? Then there's a little bit more. Starts kind of going through the heavier gain as you go through the amps. This is called Brit Rock. They can't use the real names because they're copyrighted. So
which is the Marshall stuff?
This is like a your basic Marshall kind of meat and potatoes. And if you start cranking it up, it starts kind of.
Clean sounds on it, but I think when you really hear the modeling shine is when you really start to crank up some of the distortion and get a crunch on the guitar. It really, really sounds nice.
That's a Plexi. Good sounding little unit.
So those are the amplifier modelers, and you can totally shape the sounds. You have 99 presets that work with if you're designing your own type of sounds, and you can save those in a bank. You can even use it with the computer to back up those 99 and save it to your computer, and then work on another 99 and have it like backed up on your computer and then upload it to the device really, really easily. Now we get into the effects, and the effects is where it really starts to get cool, depending on what kind of nuances you're using in your praise and worship stuff. There is 43 effects, and they're all beat synced, which is incredibly handy. You've got a master tempo on the hardware itself, and you can also use it to sync to software as a slave, to slave to whatever is the master tempo on your hardware, or your software if you're using it to record. So right now we've got a tremolo effect going, and we can throw on the internal drum machine here. It's just 99 preset drum loops, and we can see that the tremolo is just locking in straight to that tempo. There's a tap tempo function on it, so you can change the tempo in real time, and then you can listen to see how those effects completely lock in.
Those are eight notes.
Just really, really, really handy, because in the past with those types of things, you'd have to lock it in to the tempo manually and try to get it to the right place. So it takes the guesswork out of some of this stuff.
Automatically goes with the tempo.
And as we move on to the other tools and we start looking into live and software sequencers that you can be running with your praise and worship setting, this is great because it locks in right to what you're doing within live.
Mm-hmm. It'll do straight eighths, eighth triplets, and then, depends on what the effect is. Some of the effects have dotted and some of them don't. This one doesn't, but it'll go from a full measure to half notes, quarter notes, eighth notes, sixteenths, all the way up to 30 seconds. It'll do the actual note value or triplets on the tremolo. Certain other effects that will offer dotted variations as well.
So let's check out some of the other effects.
It's a bunch of variations of tremolos. This is more of a square.
Sorry. That picture I told you about the guitar.
I thought it was a chainsaw.
So this is like a filter tremolo. It's got depth control. The depth gets pretty... I mean, you can tell Roger Lynn designed a lot of these effects when you turn the depth all the way up.
Familiar with the adrenaline board, the Roger Lynn adrenaline board. And again, any of these things that Elliot's doing right now with the knobs can be assigned to a pedal very, very, very easily.
And naturally, it's got wet and dry, so you can get a little more of the dry and just mix in the effect, or you can make it a little more pronounced. Let's see, what else is there? A bunch of different variations of flanger. Beat synced choruses. Random filter. Is that a stereo effect? Sounds like it's bouncing between the speakers.
Yeah, it's panning. So you start to see some of the potential, some of the really, really cool tone, you know, tonal features and tonal like palettes that you can get with this thing.
Before we leave the effects, he's gonna do the arpeggiator. Or, you know, maybe you don't need a keyboard player as much as you once did.
That's right. Oh, that's so let's see, what other before we leave the effects section, very cool talk box effects.
Oh, yeah.
For all your Frampton bass praise and worship needs.
It's a little Ottawa, one variation of the Ottawa.
Do the voice box.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Box. Way more throaty than the typical wah pedal.
So, you have 43 of those to work with, and then you also have a separated delay effect that is separate from the rest of the effects. So you can have a delay running with the rest of the effects. The delay is pretty nice delay for a digital unit. Really great for like slapback type of sounds. And that's basically the three parameters that you have to work and shape with the sounds. The other nice thing about it is you have 99 presets that were designed by Rod Bulin and other sound designers. And some of those sounds, like right out of the box, sound pretty darn good. Do you want to play through some of the presets?
Presets?
Like the Hendrix sound on 32.
This would be something you just run through your system or you'd run through it.
Yeah, you can. There's a number of different ways that you can utilize this. You can, you know, just completely have this instead of hauling your amp around. You can bring this, you know, in a backpack. And then right now we're just running the outs of this unit straight into the speakers. Yeah. Or in the situation that we're doing right now, we're running the outs of the unit into the recording interface so that we can record it.
Right.
And then the recording interface is going to the outs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can literally just take line outs to your sound guy in your praise and worship setting, or just plug them right into monitors as well.
If I only knew some Hendrix songs.
So these are some of the presets with everything designed. What else we got?
Let's see, I always go to the drum beat one. Let's see.
Slapback sound.
So, big rectifier. There's a beat. It's called Beetle. It's probably a. Probably like a Box AC-30 or something.
Behind the black box, just a really, really useful tool that you can use within your home base or studio, or also within a plane live. It even has a really cool like microphone mount that you can just mount on a mic stand like this. So really, really good for live playing. And the nice, the other part of it, nice. I mean, you compare the Line 6, the pod has been kind of just the leader in that whole type of genre of products. The black box tends to come off a little bit cleaner with its modeling. It comes out less digital, wouldn't you say, with some of the effects, Elliot?
The effects are definitely unique, I'll say that for sure. I think the Line 6 stuff sounds good. I think this sounds just as good. I think the modeling in it is like on par. I think a lot of people will probably look at the Line 6 maybe as superior just because it's kind of been an established kind of in what it does. I think this does the stuff just as well, and the stuff that's some of the stuff that I think is really cool about the black box is the uniqueness of the effects and just how easy it is to beat sync everything.
It's
really
very
cool.
Very easy box to learn how to use. And the other nice thing is it has an audio interface built into it, so it gives you that immediate instant gratification in recording to your computer because it comes with recording light version of Ableton Live. So out of the box, it's up and ready to roll with your computer as far as recording. Which is a very nice feature as well. Second thing that we'll talk about is Ableton Live. M Audio, this big last year has been kind of mainstream frame audio because we have sustained ourselves for 15 years as an independent company, and just this previous year we were bought by a company called Avid, Avid Technologies, which Avid's real claim to fame is they pretty much make all of the equipment that most movies are cut on. They're a video specialist company. They also own an audio company called DigiDesign, and many of you are familiar with DigiDesign is the Pro Tools provider. They make hardware solutions, the big massive consoles, and actually I think like 97% of every like movie that is released in the theaters or on DVD is shot and edited on Avid equipment, and about 95% of all records that are released are cut with DigiDesign hardware and Pro Tools being the solution for that. So with that acquisition of M-Audio by Avid, we're kind of now in under those parents of companies. So one of the big things as a result of that is that Pro Tools now is compatible with all of M-Audio's audio interfaces, the FireWire interfaces and the PCI interfaces. So the Pro Tools solution, as Tony and I was talking about, is a pretty major thing because that is the huge part of Pro Tools. It's kind of still the standard for doing computer-based audio recording and audio editing. And it's the comfort factor of it is that because the major studios are all using Pro Tools and TDM systems, stuff that you are doing in your home studio recording and putting together can very easily be transitioned into a studio to do mastering work or to do refinished work. Those projects are very easily transferred. As a matter of fact, that's kind of what we were doing with this project that we prepared for this presentation is going from a TDM-based studio to a laptop-based, smaller studio running a mobile interface.
Well, the funny thing was, too, about that is that it started the other way. It's gone full circle. It started on a laptop, on a little inbox setup. Guy did everything on a laptop. Then he gave it to Jason Halbert to remix on his TDM system.
Right.
Which then I got a bunch of the stems back, put it in my TDM system, and then put it back down to laptop.
Right.
Compatible.
Yeah. I mean, that's always been one of the really, really strong advantages of Pro Tools and using a Pro Tools-based recording system on your computer is that just complete ease of use of swapping out, and trading off of the same file into many, many different studio setups. So we are going to go right into live, and I'm going to show you how this project that we kind of started work on, which had its originations in a Pro Tools environment, will be transferred over into live to use more in a live type of standpoint. First thing that we're going to do is just kind of get to know Live really easy. Ableton Live is a full-functioning digital audio workstation. It has it has many, many advantages to it, as hopefully we will unveil. But one of the first things that I always stress about the program is just how incredibly easy Live is to use, which is a very attractive point if you're new to the computer-based recording manipulation. It's always comforting when you have a program that is pretty intuitive and up and running. So let's just take a small tour of it here. Everything is done in a single window. So as opposed to working in a Pro Tools environment or working in a Logic environment or a Digital Performer where you have a window that's open for mixing and a window that's open for audio editing, everything's done in this one window. The only exception is I can hit the Tab key on my computer and it alternates between what we call arrange mode and session mode. This is session mode and this is arrange mode. Arrange mode is always good to start in because this is how we're used to recording. It's a very linear-based recording environment where we have bars and we just basically record across horizontally. We'll get into the advantages of the session mode. The session mode is like very non-linear. It's more like the where you're working out your ideas. And it can be very advantageous from a song creation type of environment where you don't really know where your song is going yet, but you've got like an idea, like a 4-bar idea or an 8-bar idea, and you want to start to work with textures or maybe pre-recorded loops or simply maybe just record several things and layer on top of each other and see where it goes. Most of the time when I work within Live, and especially on the onset of the creation process, I'll go right into this method, and then I'll work my way over to the linear method. But Let's just record a couple things linearly just to show you how easy it is to get up and running. I've got two tracks right now, two tracks of audio and two tracks of MIDI. I can very easily add in more tracks of audio just by inserting an audio track. I can do that up here by insert audio track, or I'm using the shortcut, which is Command T. So I can have unlimited audio tracks. I can stack as many audio tracks and as many MIDI tracks as I want on top of each other. My only limitation is my computer once the CPU maxes out. And actually, if it's just recording pure audio tracks, it takes a lot of audio tracks to crap a computer out. More often than not, it's like the processing that you do to those tracks, the reverbs that you put on it, and the compressors that really start to tax the environment. So what I want to do here is I'm just going to set up a track to record record Elliot playing guitar. And before I do that, what I want to do is just find a nice like drum loop or something that he can play too. So we're just going to kind of start the song creation type of process here. So I'm going to go to this window on the side here, which is called my browser. My browser is where all of my audio information is stored. It's where I would access loops that I have stored that loaded on my computer. It's where I can access pre-recorded stuff, like if I've recorded guitar in another project and I want to access that. It's also where I can access like all of my plugins, like reverbs and compressors and things like that. All of that's accessed through that window. This window down here we can take care of really quickly too, because it's just the info view. Anywhere that I move my cursor over the screen, it's going to tell me exactly what that is. So if I'm not familiar with the stop button, what the stop button does, then it's going to tell me point blank that it stops. Once, and this is really, really nice because you can bypass the manual altogether and kind of just learn your way around the program just by using this browser. Once you know your way around the program, then you can collapse that window by hitting the triangle, and you've increased your real estate. Instead of four windows, you're down to three windows. So let's go here and find a loop. I'm going to go to one of these three folders that's marked 1, 2, or 3, which is just access different partitions of my hard drive. And I'm going to go to where I have my loops stored, which is in my sample library and my procession loops. And let's go here to percussion loops. So one of the first really, let's see here, let's try one big word. One of the first advantages of Live is that say you're using like content from like drum libraries, and a lot of us do because one, it's hard to mic a drum set, and two, it's a lot of us don't have drum sets ready to mic, and three, a lot of us aren't drummers and we can't, you know, get good sounding drum tracks. We're either left with the option of programming in drums, which some are good at and some aren't good at, but then we're still left with like a not so traditional sounding drums. So a lot of times turning to drum based loop libraries is a good alternative to getting some slamming, you know, foundation to the songs that we're writing. And it's definitely where I would start. The disadvantage of it is when you're working with loops, you're a slave to the way that the performance is being played, and also the tempo of what the performance is being played. If you have the perfect style, but it's 40 BPM faster than the song that you're hearing in your head, you're a slave to that idea. That's where Live really, really shines, because I can go and browse some ideas here. Just simply click on the audio file. I'm just going to scroll down and listen to a couple different things. Okay, so say this one full loop. It's kind of a nice idea, it's way too fast. So I'm going to just go up here to my master tempo, which is set to 120, and I know I want it to be slower, so I'm going to take it down to 90. Check this out. Automatically takes that drum loop, no matter what tempo that it was recorded in, and it makes it fit into what your master tempo idea is. This is huge, and so many programs do not do this at all. So now what I can do is I'm just going to drag that drum loop out of my browser and into my project. And we're just going to go linearly here, and I'm going to do a 16-bar little idea that I'm working on. And I just simply drag that and stretch that out as for 16 bars. And let's rename this loop. And now when I hit play, I can expand that out and actually see the audio if I want. Good, so we've got our drum loop going. So now what I want to do is I'm going to record a couple of different guitar things, and we'll just stack them on top of each other. So I'm going to go to my audio track 1 and set it up for guitar. I'm going to do just 2 steps. This section that says audio to, audio from, I want to set it to external in, which that selects my audio interface. In this case, it's the FireWire 410 that I'm using. Your case, it would be the Delta 66. Whatever sound card that you're using for your inputs and outputs is what the external in will default to. And we've got the black box going in stereo into 1 and 2, and that's what I have it set to. So we're all ready to go, and Elliot can play here, and we're getting sound. So now all I basically have to do is just arm record and hit play. I'm sorry, I lied. Arm record on here too would be a good idea. To work with here. Let's just solo that guitar part all together.
Everybody loves hearing a track being solo, right?
So, when I drag that drum loop over, or when I've armed record and recorded Elliot playing guitar, all these are now called clips. And clips are very, very, the same way that I can take that drum loop and mold that into whatever I want, I can take this guitar part and mold that into whatever I want. I just double click it and it pulls up my last window, which is where I do most of my work if I'm doing audio editing, and that's this edit window here. So here we can listen back to what Elliot played. Setting up that little rhythm idea, it's like a little 2-bar harmonic idea, and bars 6 through 8 is what I really liked. Or let's say bars 2 through 6 were not so much in the pocket, but 6 through 8 really sounded good, and I just want to do that. Do that idea against that drum loop. Very simple. I have 2 simple editing features that I can use, the start point and the end point. So I'm just going to take that bracket and move it to 6, and I'm going to take this bracket and move it to 8. Now, what I can do here is stretch this out, and as long as I have the loop selected down here, if I stretch this out up on the linear mode, then I'm going to get that same 2 bars. Nice little rhythm guitar part that I'm really, really liking. So let's actually stack another guitar part on top of it. But I don't even want to have Elliot record yet, because he played quite a bit of information in just that first run of it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this, I'm going to copy it, and I'm going to move it over here and copy it down into audio track number 3. And we can just rename this to guitar 2. So right now we have the same type of thing selected. But what I'm going to do is just move it over into another section of the song, and I'm going to solo that to see what I'm playing here. Cool. So let's see how these layer together. So now, same idea, same run through, just taking very easily two bars from one section of it, two bars from another section, copying on two different tracks, and I've got two different songs. Okay, sounds like butt right now. But let's see what we can do. So let's see if we can throw some effects or something on that third one to maybe, I don't know. This is probably going nowhere.
Yeah, I think I played I think that was where I started thinking about my grocery list, I think, in the middle of the grocery list.
Let's try this. Here is just through an effect. I went to my effects, and again, I accessed my effects, my audio, everything through the browser. All through these three buttons, anything that I want to put on that is where I would select it there. So I just went for an auto filter effect, and I simply just dragged it the same way that I dragged the audio information. I dragged it on top of that effect, and it's there in the chain. Now I can drag more things in that chain if I want. If I want to put an EQ on there as well, I can drag it just straight into the chain if I want to rearrange it so that the signal flow is going to the EQ before it's going to the auto filter. It's all very, very simple drag and drop, you know, very logical how you would want to do it. So let's actually try this. Let's take... So let's try this. Let's actually take this and transpose it. So now what I'm going to do is take some of that same principles that I did behind that drum loop, and I'm going to apply them to this. Now, I have complete control, like clay, over audio that's being recorded in or audio that I'm using from loop-based audio files. So what I'm going to do now is two things. I'm going to take this beats, and I'm going to move it to tones. What I'm doing here is I'm changing the equation that Live is using to stretch or compress the audio. So I want to change the pitch. And actually, let me move it to beats, and you'll see what I'm talking about here. If I change the pitch of this guitar part, now it changes it without changing the tempo, but if I start to change it too much, do you guys start to hear the warbles? Which is the disintegration of the audio. It's kind of like, you know, if you pull enough on something, then it's going to break. It's going to snap. And that's what's happening to the audio. But this is another really cool part of Live, is the fact that I can change the equation or the way that Live is doing that, and it smooths it out. I'm going to change it to tones, which is optimal for a pitched bass type of performance. And let's do the same type of transposition. It's not there anymore. So, let's actually...
Okay.
getting. I don't think we're going to make these two parts, guitar parts coexist. But I have control over the pitch of that as well as the tempo. So if I decided that I want to make this even slower. So I have complete control over those elements which before would have been tied together. Live is originally introduced as an audio sequencer, and when you really think about it, that's exactly what it is, because sequencing is something that we tie to MIDI, and programming in MIDI notes, and then after the fact, changing the pitch or moving the time around, but we're actually doing the same type of sequential possibilities with real audio, which is pretty fantastic. Let's move on to this project that we pulled up.
We forgot the lead track.
It's coming. We won't. We it's definitely coming. Okay, so we're going to open up this track that originally started in a studio, and we'll play you the bare sequence here, and we'll kind of show you how this can be utilized within live, to be utilized in a live setting, in a praise and worship setting, because we all kind of have. Let's see here. All these are offline. We all have different worship bands. I mean, we're all in different types of situations. Some of us have massive, you know, lots of talent and drums and bass and horns and orchestra. Others come from a much more scaled down, you know, where it's. We don't even maybe not even have a guitar player that can make it every Sunday, or we have an organ player that's less than reliable and has to duck out. That's why sequencing is always great. And how many of you have played to sequences before, incorporated live? What's been the good part of playing to sequences?
Mistakes.
No mistakes and a nice big full record like sound, which we all strive for. What's the down part of playing?
You get off your stuff.
If you get off, and also there's no room for those.
Ad-libs.
Yeah, what's the best part of like about playing live that everybody digs is like when things are slamming, you know, and everybody's getting into it, and you don't want to go on to the next section, right? Like you want to stay there, or somebody's taking a screaming guitar solo, and rather than agree with the sequencer, you know, and go to the next part of the song. And especially in a praise and worship setting where you have those moments where if you have a really, really slamming praise and worship leader that's really getting the crowd into it, the last thing that they want to do is be a slave to a set type of thing. Live is kind of the answer to it because it has so many flexible options within it. So this is kind of what we started with, was this track that was done in the studio, and we'll let you listen to a little bit of it here. This is just pretty much guitar parts, bass parts, and vocals.
You're the one who holds all mysteries, the giver of all dreams, and when all is overwhelming, I promise peace. So I put my trust in you.
Track. They were all this was all recorded in a Pro Tools environment, and let's give you like kind of a taste on how easy it is to transfer over from that environment into a live environment. What we're going to do is close this set here. We're going to open up a new set. And I'm simply just going to navigate my way to my desktop here to this Fragile Moon folder. And I have my Fragile Moon sounds. And these are just the audio files that were exported from your Pro Tools environment. So I'm going to set up my tracks, insert audio tracks, so I have enough audio tracks to sustain this. And I'm going to drag my AC, which is
acoustic.
Drag my bass. Drag my background vocals. Drag guitar A. Drag guitar B. Just simply drag and drop audio files straight in. D. And then last but not least, the vocals. Oops.
D.
Oh. Thank you, achievement. You're the level-headed friend I never had. Okay, so now I have my tracks, and notice that I'm operating in session view for this, because in a live type of environment where you want to really have control over sections of the song, the session view is much more feasible than the linear view. And that only makes sense, right? Because if we're in a live environment, we don't want time to be so strict. We don't want it to like line up with, you know, bar 16, you go here, unless we're playing with charts. If we're not playing with charts and we're playing in a traditional type of, you know, gig type of setting, then time it should be non-existent. The intro should be able to stretch out however long you want it to stretch out. People shouldn't call me during presentations. So that's where these scenes come in. I have 1, 2, 3, and 4 going down on the right-hand side of the screen. And if I trigger this scene, it's going to trigger all of those audio tracks together so that we hear the original result. With everything lined up. Now we want to take it a step further, though.
You're one who holds all mysteries.
We want to start to arrange this into sections of the song. So if we listen back to this again, we got about a 4-bar wait of silence, which we want to get out of there. And then
you're the one who holds all mystery.
Like a two-bar instrumental introduction before the vocals come in. So what I'm going to do here to do that, I'm just going to make copies of this whole scene, of all these clips together. And I can do that really, really easy by going to my edit window here and go copy or duplicate scenes. I duplicate scenes and it just goes straight down. So I can actually do several of these scene duplications and just pull a lot of the same clip over and over and over again. But remember how Elliot recorded that guitar part and it was only bars 6 through 8 that I really, really was digging? And how I could take that whole 16-bar performance and just consolidate it down into basically a two-bar performance that loops over and over. I'm basically going to use the same principle here because I'm going to go to my acoustic guitar part here. I'm going to bring up my measures. Actually, the acoustic guitar part is
it's a guitar B, I think.
Guitar B is where,
if I remember correctly.
Okay. So guitar B is the kind of the intro part of it. And I see down here that I have my measures represented here. And I wanted to basically start at bar 5 after the silence and end at bar 7. So that if we solo this, we should just hear. Have that actually loop. So then this is on. So then what I want to do is set up this entire scene so it's just the introduction. So that all my clips are just looping bars 5 through 9, basically. And I can do that really, really, really easy just by copying that edit that I already did, the guitar B, and I'm just going to copy it over to all these parts so that we have a ton of guitar Bs. And then what I'll do is go back and drag the acoustic guitar part back into that guitar B. So right now it's that guitar B, but I can just drag this acoustic guitar part back down in there. And now it's the acoustic guitar part, but with those bars 5 through 9 set. So do the same thing with the bass. Drag the bass back in there. Do the same thing with the background vocals. Drag the background vocals back in there. Go to guitar A. Drag those back in there. Guitar B is already set because that's the one that I did. Guitar C, drag guitar C back down into that window. And then finally, we're going to close with guitar D. And we'll do the box. Okay. Now it's confusing right now because the names still indicate guitar B on everything. But I just simply have to rename those to what they actually are, which is acoustic guitar intro. And then this becomes the bass intro. And so forth. So now I can cue up this scene.
Yo.
Now it's got that pickup from the vocals because the vocals is getting ready to go into the main verse. But we can very easily just mute that out. Because we're probably gonna have somebody leading the lead vocals anyway. So when you're all done arranging that section of the song and cutting those into little pieces, then it's gonna look something like this. So we've got the complete, and we've got guitar intro.
You're the one who holds all mysteries, the giver of all dreams. And when all is overwhelming, promise peace. So I put my trust in you.
Okay, so we have several things going on right now, and we have some follow action things, which is jumping up over the gun. Let me go back one thing here. Let's go to fragile. Okay, so this is more of what I'm looking for here. Guitar intro. This intro is just gonna vamp as long as I possibly want it to vamp. Let's take the lead vocal out. Section of the song can run as long as we want it to go. And a loop. Sub chords. Background vocals within it. What I did here is on the verse I just started playing around because we actually left the drums out of this because the drums were so badly out of time. So we were kind of messing around with this last night and just starting to pull in different loops, pre-recorded loops, and seeing how it sounded. So that's exactly what I did here. This is our verse right now with our vocal muted, and now we can start having fun sort of adding some things within it, like going to some of our loops. Thank you. sound that I like is these are these top loaders. Hold this in. Throw it in there and bring the mix way down. Pan it off to the side so those subdivisions are an integral part of it, and then go from there. So what we have here is we have everything sort of mapped out. Now we can go one step further because everything that I'm doing on the computer. But I can very easily set each of these scene changes up to, say, keys on the laptop. So let's say I wanted to make, you know, my laptop was up here and I was playing, and the intro would be the bottom keys on my QWERTY keyboard. So I'd do Z, X, let's do, straight across to you.
Do you have a question?
Yeah. Well, when you're recording live, does the computer automatically establish the tempo?
When I'm recording live?
Live, yeah.
Like if we were going to record Elliot a track? No, it wouldn't do that for you automatically.
So, I mean, when you put the drum loop in there, I mean, how does it...
The drum... Okay, so pre-recorded stuff,
yeah.
If you buy, like, commercially cut loops,
right.
They're already cut.
Right.
So then you bring those in, and there's already a tempo tag. There'd
right.
be a tempo tag, and it would be set.
But you recorded all the vocals and guitars live, correct?
Yes. This is actually... Part of the reason I did it is we wanted to use this project was because as loose as it is now, you should have heard it when we started with it. Just some of this stuff was just really, really bad timing.
Yeah. Okay.
It doesn't do it now, but actually, Live 5, which is coming out, I think, at the end of July,
will
automatically put down warp markers and analyze the tempo.
But it brings up a good point because this is exactly what we encountered. Like, some of this stuff was all over the place. Tempo. This was supposed to be. It was recorded to a click, so it basically was around the click.
So, yeah.
But it had some fluctuations. But just for fun, let me show you this, Elliot. I'm gonna have you play quarter notes, just chord, you know. And I'm gonna turn the metronome on and have him I'm gonna have him track to the click. But I want you to play like a couple bars in time and then drift further and further and further out of time, just to simulate a point here in live.
Are you getting me?
Yeah, I got you. I got you. Play. So we're just going to record a track here. So we can pull this up, and it was recorded at 120, and we can zoom in here, and he started playing on bar 3, so even when he was trying to play in time. So let's check it out. So let's take bar 8 where it really starts to get a little wonky here. And what we're going to do is start to manually correct some of this stuff. So I'm going to take bar 8 and I'm going to move it. And just, I can't change the recording because the recording is already there stored on my disk. But what I can change is the way that Live reads that recording. So what I'm going to do is kind of the same principle as when I move the tempo on Live. You know, I can do that. This was recorded at 120, and I can go back and say play it back at 100. So this time what I'm going to do is bring the measures, or the warp, what Live calls warp markers, I'm going to bring them to the audio. So if he was lagging behind and late, then I'm just going to move that warp marker to it so it's not interpreted as late anymore. pretty cool. So we'll do that with there, and we'll take 8-3, and we've got to move a little bit of a ways there. And it's really, really simple to do because you can see the landmarks of the waveform really, really, really easy. 9-3 and 10. So let's go and just we'll loop that one little section here of from bar 8. The bar 10. Actually, that was 11. Check it out. Okay, so you hear the bubbles, right? We know we can correct that. How? How do we get rid of those bubble disintegrations? It's in here somewhere. Those who weren't sleeping, it's this. Change the algorithm to tones. And it's perfectly in time. I can even get funky with it and change, like, say I want those to be quarter notes instead. This will be a stretch here. He's playing half notes. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's say I just want to go all together and...
Oh, sorry, you did ask for quarter notes, didn't you?
I did. It's okay. Take 8-2 and drag it to that quarter note. Take 8-3 and drag it to what was a half note. Take 8-4, do the same thing. Take 9, do the same thing. I'm not quite sure how this is going to turn out, but I'm thinking it'll turn out good.
You pick self for the secular bands when the whiskey starts kicking in. Correct, right? Good. Yeah, I'm sorry. Used to know that.
What do you blame bad timing on for guys in your worship band?
No sleep.
There you go.
Being 13, I don't know.
Let's check it out here. So I mean, you know, like the power that you have over audio is extraordinary in this. But let me show you, from a live standpoint, how this would be useful. Now I have these mapped out to keys on the keyboard. Now let's change this here to 1-3. Take the metronome off. So gives the cue to go on. Is going to sync up to the beat because I have it set to a bar quantization. So it doesn't matter where I hit that cue. It'll wait till the bar. And it really becomes obvious if you set it to a phrase. And sometimes when you're playing live, actually setting it to the 4-bar phrase is cool because then if say we're on here and then the worship leader gives the cue to go on, then I can hit it anywhere in that 4-bar phrase. I've already cued the next section. You can see it's ready to be cued. I can even go one step further and assign each of these things to a MIDI controller. Say, like, this MIDI controller that I have here. I could go and... say vocal interlude, and we'll assign it to that, and we'll assign this to this, and we'll assign this to that. It's just as simple as that. Arming the MIDI edit, and then hitting the control pad that you want. Which is great if you're a drummer, then you could just knock the pad, right? I could go even one step further and say I want to trigger in that subchorus. So arm that pad. And then I want to maybe put a way of controlling the background vocals. Say I want to do a solo over the subchorus and I don't want those backgrounds going. So I could go the mute switch here, hit the mute switch, and set another pad to control that. So now... step further, and anytime that I've had to play sequences in the past, and I'm sure that you have as well, drummer has to have a click track going, because it's the only way that you can key, and you better have a darn good drummer that can play to a click. So in this occasion, say you don't, yeah, I love that, this guy needs some whiskey. In an occasion like this, and say you're using live, and you know, you can have like auxiliary percussion stuff going on, but you don't want to take the risk of, you know, entrusting the sequence to your drummer. You can actually set a MIDI note to the tap function and go without a click running to the drummer. So let's go here. So you're playing live and you can kind of feel that the sequence is drifting away from the live, you know, performance. Tap it in. And everything is moving right with the tempo. Now, you've heard a lot of warbles and pops in there because we didn't go and set each one of those clips to the tone algorithm that's smoothing out. But you can have your whole sequence basically move to the performance. It's tricky to do that, and I'll be honest with you, I've done it once because I wanted to do it on stage once. But the drummer that we use at our church is really, really, really strong, so it's always easier to run a click track. It's always better to run a click track. And it's always better to either have the keyboard player in control of it or the drummer in control of it, because the drummer can just hit a stick, you know, on a pad to cue the next section, or the keyboard player can do that as well. But it has been done. I have done it where we've done it with no click track just for the sake of trying it. And the drummer had one of those little MIDI, kind of like this, a little bit like this. And as he was playing, as he felt the tempo drift, he would knock four quarter notes down on it and it would bring it right back. So what that last set that we pulled up was... And are we way over time? Or
what is it? 4 o'clock is the time. I think it is.
A couple minutes left.
I think you're dead on, brother.
But if you are a guitar player, which I think probably most of you guys are, you can also actually trigger clips with a foot pedal.
3 minutes.
3 minutes. Yeah, you can also do a foot pedal to advance the sequences on. Now, what Elliot did is he kind of took it one step further on this next track. He added in some loops into it and added in some other things. And he also put some follow sequences in. In each clip, you have the ability to do follow patterns. You can, like, program the way that it plays. The best example that I can give of this is, like, say, you know, in your worship song, you have an interlude. And that interlude is always going to be two bars. You just know that it's never going to, that you're not going to ever stretch that interlude out. But you know that there's this specific section that is where the praise and worship leader might go and talk over the music. Or there's another section that might turn into a solo. So you know those specific sections in the songs that could be stretched out. The rest of them, you don't want to have to worry about triggering the next section when you know it's going to go right into that. So that's where you can program in follow actions, which is what Elliot's done here, which is basically moving it for you. So if I trigger the guitar intro, it's triggering the next section. And then it's triggering the next section after that.
Dreams, put my trust in you.
This is kind of like sort of a finished idea with some loops and some other things going. And the last thing that we thought we'd show you, live is a really, really favorite program by remixers, people that are like taking stuff and doing really, you know, unique remixes to it, because you can imagine why, because you can very easily drag in your acapella vocals into a thing and then just do like a Middle Eastern remix or a dance remix or whatever. So this is a remix that was done by Jason Halbert of the same song, using live and Pro Tools.
Rewired live and Pro Tools.
Of this Fragile Moon song. Jason Halbert is the music director for American Idol, and he's also the music director for Kelly Clarkson when she goes on the road. Name dropping is good.
Cool.
So this is a little bit of that same song as remixed using the same tools that we're showing you by Jason Halbert.
You're the world's own
and compressed.
So I'll put my trust in you.
They are live drums.
I think what he did was the bad drums, and he spent about 3 days
warping
them. And not just that much time warping, but also spent that time actually using all the live drums, also trigger samples. He spent a long time making them sound real good. Thank God.
Anybody have any questions over any of the things we talked about? Some hardware type of utilities that you can use. Pretty much everything that we talked about today and everything that you see here is under $300. Black Blocks is $279. There's actually a music reseller that's set up over in our booth that's reselling the show. They're doing 10% off all the prices. So that's $279. You can actually even register to win a free one. We're giving away one free one at the show. Studio monitors, which we didn't spend much time talking about, but are really, really great flat reference monitors for your home studio. Those are $299 for the pair of speakers. The interface that we used is $299. It gives you capability of bringing four discrete tracks in at the same time. The other nice thing about this interface is it has 10 outs. So for a live, notice that really the only thing that's plugged in is the computer. The interface is running off the power of my computer, so I can have it be completely mobile. This MIDI surface is powered off my computer. But this head gives you 10 outs, which is great if you are running a click to the drummer. You have 10 different outs to bus audio to. So you can take two outs and send it to your sound engineer. You can send three and four to the drummer and drop in a click like that. You can send five and six to the vocal. You can just route audio a number of different ways with this piece. Pro Tools, which is compatible with our hardware, everything from our $99 PCI card to our more expensive PCI cards to the FireWire. That's $299 Pro Tools software. And Ableton Live, which we looked at, was $399.
You can just ultimately produce a CD with your...
Oh, yeah. I mean, if we took what we were doing there with Live and wanted to take that and bounce that to a CD, obviously, we would probably want to do some more heavy work with what we were showing.
Just a demo.
But if I pull this up, I can simply just go here to File and Render to Disk, and it'll render that WAV file. Just take everything that we've done, and it'll dump it onto a WAV file, and then that WAV file can be burned to a CD, and it's ready to go. Very, very, very simple. So, anybody have any questions? Was this helpful? I mean, was this...
Yeah,
okay.